KSRO Santa Rosa. This is the KSRO California State Assembly District 2 Candidates Debate between Mike Greer and Chris Rogers, with moderators Dr. David McEwen, Professor of Political Science at Sonoma State University, and Jason Walsh, editor of North Bay Biz magazine. Now, here is your host, KSRO's Jeff Woodworth.
Good afternoon, and yes, it is the California State Assembly District 2 debate here at KSRO. I'm joined live in studio with Chris Rogers and Mike Greer, and our moderators Dr. Dave McEwen and Jason Walsh. And without further ado, I will turn it over to both Dr. Dave and Jason Walsh.
Hi, Mike and Chris. Thanks for coming to our assembly debate. I'm Jason Walsh. I'm editor of North Bay Biz magazine. And I'll kick off the questions for the debate with a question for Mike Greer. Mike, you're running to become a freshman assembly member in a rural district where Democrats outnumber Republicans around 2-1, if not more, in a legislature with all three branches led by Democrats. What will you do to become an effective second district representative when many of your constituents and Capitol colleagues don't see eye to eye with you on some issues?
That's an excellent question, because we do know that with the supermajority, there's not much a two-party system can do, because we know that California is a one-party state. What I have to do and what I will do is be loud, consistent, and make sure that I voice the opinions and the thoughts and the desires of those that are within District 2. What we've seen so far in the past couple of years is that we've been promised a lot of things by our legislatures, and it's just like the rest of the state, where, you know, legislators are 40%, you know, is the approval rating for our legislators right now. Because we don't get those services. All we hear are hopes and dreams. And until we actually go ahead and get different representation, someone that knows how to work with the other side, somebody that can talk about different things and come together and be concise and be able to bring different points of view together to come to the decision and the proper things in order to make our district prosperous, so that our families can have, you know, cost of living that they can actually go out and buy food and groceries, where they can actually have lower energy costs, you know, where we actually have education, that we see rising test scores, not those that are sitting on the bottom. This is the type of thing that we need to do, and the only way I can do it as someone that doesn't have a real voice right now is to be loud, to make those headlines, and to let people know that I will continue to be that until our people in this district are heard, and that the promises that they're being made are actually fulfilled, because it hasn't happened in 10 years, as we've seen everything else go down the road, where almost 60% of the state of California think we're going in the wrong direction.
Thanks, Mike. Chris, do you want to respond? And Chris, what do you think about giving voice to the politically underrepresented in the district?
Yeah, absolutely. So your job as a legislator is to make sure that you are able to adequately represent the needs and the values of the community that you serve. That doesn't mean that you only go to Democratic areas if you're a Democrat, or Republican areas if you're a Republican. And this district is the third largest in the state of California. It's exceptionally diverse, which means that representation needs to be active and on the ground and able to advocate and articulate the specific concerns of your community, whether it's Santa Rosa or all the way to Hayfork. The challenge for somebody who is a Republican in this district is not necessarily a Sacramento side challenge. The challenge is, as you pointed out, that the values don't align with two-thirds of the people who live in this district. This district is less likely to elect somebody who doesn't believe in climate change and coastal protection, who doesn't believe in LGBTQ rights, who isn't supportive of reproductive choice. Those aren't Sacramento side problems. When you get up there, you're not going to figure out how to, across party, change people's minds on those issues. But when you talk about the values that people have in this district, that's where it becomes a bigger challenge. Is how are you going to go up to Sacramento and advocate when you fundamentally disagree with your own district on many of these issues? You can articulate local concerns. You can push for local funding. but really it comes down to a value-based voting system in this district. And yes, up in Sacramento, you are going to be much more effective if you have friends that you agree with on major policy issues. That doesn't mean that there aren't issues that you can work across the aisle on. For instance, you mentioned the rural nature of this district. There are some ag issues, for sure, that Democrats and Republicans can work on. But those big picture value issues that many people are concerned about in their community, particularly when they see what's happening at the federal level, those are ones that you can't just run roughshod over and say, we need a different voice.
Mike, what do you think about that? Would you have to adjust your values to represent the district?
I don't adjust my values. I adjust my understanding. As Chris pointed out, one thing, of course, he talks about abortion. I do not agree with abortion. For the social or personal convenience, there are times when it's necessary. But what he's talking about has absolutely no effect in California. We passed the proposition that made it legal in California, but because he just focuses on, yes, you don't have that, that's not the problem. Let's get to the root of the problem. The problem is there's not medical issues are not being solved for everybody. It doesn't matter if you're a child. It doesn't matter if you're a woman, if a man. It doesn't make any difference. We don't have those settled. And this is what they do, and it's very common. You could pick out certain little things that don't even apply to the district. What does apply to the district is the fact that the people that have been representing us in the legislature have not represented us on the fishing. They've cut off our fishing. They cut off our logging. You know, every time we do that, what happens? It cuts off the tourism. And so these are the issues that we're having. They're not doing it. They come up there and say, yeah, we'll be there, but they don't do anything.
And what about that, Chris? Some of these issues, as Mike says, are pretty settled. They're not really in play.
I actually am a little bit flabbergasted that he'd say that this doesn't apply to the district when just a week and a half ago, the attorney general sued a hospital in Eureka, which is very much in this district, for illegally denying access to reproductive choice for a woman. She came in. She was pregnant with twins. Her water broke at 15 weeks. One twin was already unviable, and the hospital refused to give her an emergency abortion and instead sent her out the door where she almost died before she got to another hospital. It very much is still an issue in our district.
But like
because
you
if
said,
you don't have access, if
the
you
law
don't have
still,
it, yep.
Like you said, the law still is the law.
But if you don't have access and if you're not pushing for service providers to have to provide access for folks, it doesn't matter if the state constitution says you have a right to it. You don't have a right if you don't have access. And that ignores the fact that he supports Donald Trump, who, if comes in, is going to push a national abortion ban. And this district expects their representative to be a very vocal opponent to that as well.
All right. Dave McEwen here, a professor in political science at Sonoma State. And the ground rules, right? We give you each 2 minutes at the beginning, go back and forth, 1 minute on rebuttal. So we'll work with you on the clock there about that. And the first question that I have is to Chris Rogers. So, Chris, we've talked a lot about fires and that being an important issue, but we've kind of evolved past fires and wildland protection in terms of kind of attention for voters at the moment and voters particularly in this district and throughout California. And that's been the focus on insurance. Yep. And what insurance looks like. And this is a real sticky problem, a very difficult problem. So we'd like to ask each of you about the issues related to homeowners insurance and insurance in general, especially in light of catastrophic fires that we've had, for example, in parts of this district. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And this has quickly become from one of the largest issues in the district to being a complete crisis for folks. And I'm just going to say candidly, the insurance commissioner should have been dealing with this 10 years ago when it first started to pop up and when we first started to see insurance providers leave the state. And instead, nothing was done until some of the larger providers like State Farm started to raise the white flag. What we need is a more sophisticated understanding of how insurance applies at our local level. We have a much more sophisticated understanding of our topography, how fire moves, what red flag warnings look like, and what sort of home hardening is going to be effective for not just protecting one home, but really acting as herd immunity for an entire community when a catastrophic wildfire pushes through. We need to allow insurance companies to be more sophisticated in how they apply their models. It can't just be based on zip code. Otherwise, we all get swept into areas that can't actually afford insurance and pushes more people into the FAIR plan, which, quite frankly, at one point is going to become insolvent if we continue to push people there. when you look at this district and the fire challenges that it's had, just in my time on city council, we've been through 4 wildfires, for instance, that have had catastrophic results. The cascade effect on the insurance market is immediate and then also continues to carry through for a couple of years. We need to give more sophisticated tools to insurance providers, and we also need to make sure that they have incentives and are required to reinsure people, that when they drop somebody, they have to tell them what they need to do to their property to be back insurable. And if that person does that, if that community does that, then they need to be able to have access to insurance. We also see many communities that have become self-help communities around fire prevention, as well as doing home hardening projects to try to literally make their communities safer. That needs to be reflected as well in the insurance markets.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Mike, we want to, same question to you, give you 2 minutes to lay out kind of the issues around insurance, especially in light of these catastrophic fires that we've had. Thank you.
Absolutely. I'm very familiar with the wildlife process. I've lobbied in both Sacramento and in Washington, D.C. on wildlife, you know, wildfire issues, because I am a victim of that. I was a school board president in Paradise at the time of the campfire. We lost everything that we had built up over many, many years, and we had to go ahead and readjust. Now I have property and homes in Magalia that I cannot insure because the companies are gone. They're not here. They don't want to do it. And Chris is absolutely right in what he says. 10 years ago, this is something the Democrats should have been doing, not just the insurance commissioner, but the legislature. And they keep making laws that increase the rates for insurance. That's what they've been doing. They keep saying, oh, we'll take care of it, and they don't do it. I held a insurance license for a number of years with Prudential. I did sell home insurance and besides, you know, life insurance. So I understand the process of insurance. So I understand what needs to be done. Okay, we need to, and what Chris is saying, that we need to be more localized. Being up in Crescent City, we were without power because of fires, you know, last year for 2 weeks. Okay, and again, what happens? The farmer, everybody, especially State Farm, many other companies are leaving. In Paradise, we had one company that I almost went with that actually couldn't afford the losses they took, and they paid pennies on the dollars. And the California Fair Plan, it's one disaster away from being insolvent. It was not meant and not designed to handle the number of people that are there now, and the cost is exceedingly high. This is something that should have been done. Again, it's more of the Democrats and a one-party, you know, state say, no, we're going to ignore that. We're going to require you as an insurance company to do all these different things, which raises the cost. But Chris is right. Things need to be done. We need to take care of what's local. We need to take care of our forest. We need to have that. We had a school that was saved in Paradise because the week before the Conservation Corps came in, and they went ahead and they raked around that school. They cleaned out that underbrush. All the other homes burnt down, but that school was survived.
Chris, let me give you a minute to respond, and then we'll go back to Mike.
Yeah, I think that the narrative that we can solve our wildfire problems by raking the forests has been pretty well debunked. What we know is that we have a changing climate. Climate change is not just something that is going to happen. It is something that is actively happening that has made these wildfires more devastating. The insurance markets need to be able to catch up to address the catastrophic modeling that we know of, that we now use at the local level in preparing for wildfires, and they just haven't, quite frankly, done that yet. It is between the cost of insurance, the cost of energy, and the cost of living in California, it is pricing people out of this community. And we need to make sure that people have options and have competition to bring down the cost, but we need to also make sure that the insurance providers have these abilities to do more sophisticated modeling so that those who are doing the right thing continue to be insured.
Thank you. Mike?
I don't know where the study art says it's been debunked, because we know that sustainable forests, where they've cleaned out the undergrowth, is a lot less susceptible to fire and does not spread quite as quick. There's no question over the past few years we've had a tremendous amount of fires. Okay, those around the homes, why are we even bothering then to take care of and harden our homes if it's not going to work, according to Chris? It's going to happen anyway. No. Cleaning the forest does help. Can we do all of that? No, we can't do all of it. But we do know that the timber industry does do that, and that's why we have sustainable forests, and it does work, and it is effective. We do have to talk with the insurance companies. We do have to go ahead and do more localized. Say, okay, this area, you're not going to have that forest fire right here. So our rates shouldn't be so high. Okay? And so we're going to be facing it. We need to talk with them. And that's what the Democrats have not been doing. They have been putting it off and blaming everything on climate control until they are nothing but a party of fear and trying to mandate everything because of fear that they're trying to make everybody so afraid. If you don't do this, this is going to happen to you, which I don't agree with. I believe that we have the ability to take care of things. Chris does not believe that we can do that.
Thank you very much.
The State Assembly District 2 debate on KSRO will continue after this. Now, back to the State Assembly District 2 debate on KSRO.
Yes, welcome back to the California State Assembly District 2 debate here on KSRO between Chris Rogers and Mike Greer. My name is Jeff Woodworth, and I will be turning this over back to our moderators, Dr. Dave McEwen and Jason Walsh.
Well, welcome back, and thank you again both for joining us. So the first question that I have out to you is really going to be, Mike, I'm going to come to you about affordability, about economics, the pocketbook. And we know that this is a central concern of voters in the national race, but we also know it's a concern to voters locally and certainly in AD2. And one of the issues has obviously been energy, electricity, just a general pocketbook for voters. So I'm wondering if each of you could speak to that issue about affordability in the pocketbook and what you see as voters' concerns and how you intend to address it. Thank you.
I think in my point of view, the biggest cause of our cost of living going up so much, whether it's building homes, whether it's groceries, is the cost of energy. And we have seen in California our energy costs go so high because of the legislation that has been passed in Sacramento. Unfortunate, I was able to buy gas at $3.65 a gallon on my way down here at an Indian casino. Why is that? Because they don't have to put on all the taxes that the state does. We know that the governor just went ahead and says, okay, we have a new bill, okay, that he just put in. It says you have to have all this storage for this so we don't have all these spikes. Well, that storage is going to cost money, so it's going to make energy costs go higher. We need to find some way that we don't have all the mandates for clean energy in the state of California. We need to work together. Let's phase out fossil fuels. Phase it out. Don't just cut it out. Right now, what, maybe 17% of the energy in California is clean energy? Everything else is still fossil fuels? Continue to do that. And that's essential. But we can't go ahead and lower the cost of food, housing, anything else that we're doing until we get hold of the energy cost. Every time gas goes up, that means our food's going to go up. Okay, every time that we have new regulations put on, the real estate group nationwide just came out and said 30% of all of the cost of homes are because of regulation. And we can see that. It's just like the permit. Notice I didn't say the increased taxes this time, Chris, because you were right. You corrected me the other day on one of the things there, and it's a permit fee. Who's going to pay for those permit fees? Not the people that get the permits. It goes to the consumer. Everything that's done does not stop at the companies. It goes down to the consumer. Every time we tax lumber, every time we tax all this, it doesn't matter. It's going to come to the consumer, and that's what's hurting us right now. And it's the it's not just the affordability. It's we don't have the housing. And when you don't have that affordability, people with money can buy more, and the people on the bottom end don't get any. And that's what's basically happening, in my opinion.
Thank you. Chris, the affordability, economic kind of pocketbook issues for the 2nd District.
Yeah, absolutely. As I talk to people, it's one of the things that they're the most concerned about is how are they going to continue to survive in California? And while it's easy to point fingers, the one that I hear the most over and over and over again from people is at PG&E, wanting to know how is it that they are now having their fourth rate increase when PG&E is already the most expensive utility provider in the nation when you look at their per kilowatt hour. And the CPUC has turned into a rubber stamp for what PG&E wants approved. We need better regulations on the CPUC. We need more pressure from legislators. We need to make sure that our community's voice is actually being reflected over when the CPUC is reviewing whether or not a rate increase is appropriate. Meanwhile, you had PG&E showed a 25% increase in profit last year. We talk about gas prices. We have seen gas companies that have had record profits year over year since the pandemic, while also seeing that cost increase and passed on to consumers. We are both in a system where we need more competition, and we see that Sonoma Clean Power actually is cheaper than PG&E. We see that the Redwood Coast Energy Authority is cheaper than PG&E. And we know that the most expensive municipal utility provider in the state is cheaper than the least expensive IOU in the state, investor-owned utility in the state. We need more competition. We need more access to clean energy. And we need to make sure that we have people in Sacramento who are going to fight to make sure that price gouging is punished appropriately and that that cost isn't just passed on to our consumers to line somebody else's pockets.
Thank you. Mike, let's come back to you for 1 minute.
Talk about price gouge, especially in the energy markets. We know that the governor actually established a committee to go ahead and take a look at it, and that was over almost 2 years ago. And what has happened? Nothing. Nothing happens. All the Democrats do is talk, talk, talk. They don't do anything. Who's on the California Public Utilities Committee? Those people that are appointed by the Democrats. They're the ones that are causing all these problems. You can talk about PG&E and all the other ones, and you're absolutely right about the cost. But the fact remains that the people that are in charge are the ones that the Democrats have approved of, the ones that the Democrats want there. That needs to change, and it's not going to change by electing another Democrat from our district.
All right, Chris.
I don't know. Folks on this channel have worked with me. They've seen how I've led in my community. They know that this is one of the big issues that I care the most about, having worked in renewable energy and worked on the finance side of it. I agree. The governor has completely screwed our community when it goes to his appointments to the CPUC. I agree that PG&E needs to be held accountable, and I've done that as a city council member. And it's easy to just throw up your hands and say the Democrats are the reason that everything is wrong in the state. I would love to hear how you would like to fix it, because so far the only thing that I hear from you is elect me and I will I'll make it work.
Well, you're absolutely right. How do you fix it when there's a supermajority? Okay, it's very difficult. You have to be loud. The only time they change anything is when the public talks enough and they're speaking loud enough that they'll actually go ahead and listen. And you're right, it is the Democrats. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Chris, quick rebuttal?
No, I think it's said and answered.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks, guys. This is Jason Walsh with North Bay Biz Magazine again. With the next question towards Chris, this is also about affordability of a different kind, housing. Chris, congratulations on your newborn baby last spring. As a father myself in an area where housing prices grow further and further out of reach each day, I'm sure we've both wondered how our kids will ever be able to afford to live around here in the years to come. What's your plan for ensuring our kids don't have to move to Idaho to afford a decent home?
Yeah, I actually have friends that live in Idaho that are tired of people from California moving there, so I get the question for sure. You know, when I got elected to the city council in 2016, I was told that Santa Rosa was not a place that was ever going to be amenable to new housing. And in fact, I was one of the young people who was running saying, I'm being priced out of the place where I was born and raised and the place where I want to raise a family. Since being on the council, and by the time I was done as mayor, we had received the second highest score in the state for the pro-housing designation. By looking at the ways that we could remove arbitrary barriers for housing, we focused on the time, the certainty, and the cost of development, and understood that if you do the upfront planning process to make sure that you have the community's vision at the forefront, when a developer comes in and wants to build something, you can say, if you build this that we agree on, we'll get out of your way and let you build. We'll repurpose city land. We'll reduce permit fees, which we have done in Santa Rosa. We'll make sure that we are finding ways to help put money into affordable housing projects, because we know that no affordable housing project is going to be able to get through without some assistance from the state or from the local government. But we also recognize that the longer it takes for somebody to come from speculation to groundbreaking was additional risk and additional cost, where you were subject to broader community and broader economic markets that made it so that housing might not pencil out. Right now, we have a lot of housing that we've approved that literally just can't get their financial stack in order because the rate for borrowing for capital is so high that it's preventing projects from being built. So allowing additional tools at the local level so that communities can decide what they want to build, how they want to look in the future, but making sure that those factors that I mentioned, the time, the certainty, and cost, that they have tools to be able to actually address them. And you can do that at the state level. For instance, you can look at your pension funds and you can reinvest those dollars into housing projects, which we know are going to, over time, add money into the pension fund while also addressing one of the most biggest needs that most communities in California face.
Mike, what would your answer to housing affordability be?
I think there's a couple things. Again, we have to reduce the cost, the basic cost, the basic cost of permits. You have to speed it up. There is no question about it. And some of the things Chris talked about was, okay, the local community needs to decide what they want. Well, that's not what they're doing. The city governments, the state governments are telling the communities what they have to have. They are not getting together and saying, okay, let's go ahead and do this, do it this way, do it that way. They're telling them that this is what you have to have if you want to develop it. Now, if you're a private individual that has a home and want to go ahead and build on that land, you have a tough time doing it because of the process. And there's no question that those have to be taken care of. And it's always interesting to me that Chris always brings up all the things that he did. And the fact of the matter is, when you're on a city council, it's not one person that does it, whether it's dealing with PG&E, whether it's dealing with fires. It's not the one person in that area that does it. Chris can take all the credit he wants, but I know that myself, I don't accomplish anything without somebody behind me doing the work. And that's the staff that's there. And I appreciate the staff of the different cities and the counties that are trying to push these things forward because we need to do that. But when you keep raising fees, you know, whether it's permit fees for new businesses or old businesses, whether it's more fees that you have to charge to go ahead and build a house, it's not going to go there. There's more things to it. It's very involved. But you cannot keep requiring people out in the country to go ahead and say, well, you can't build this subdivision unless you have so many affordable housing there. Okay, let's give them the chance to do it. We need housing, period, of any kind. That's what we need to do. And a lot of the things Chris said is absolutely correct. We need to streamline it. We need to go ahead and take care of some of these issues. But we also need to keep the costs down, which is just the opposite. It's being taken care of now. It's going up. The cost is going up because of additional permit fees, additional taxes, and so forth.
Chris, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I can appreciate that Mr. Greer doesn't want to give me credit for things I did as mayor, but wants to blame me for things that Democrats in Sacramento that I have nothing to do with do. So just really want to appreciate that. Second, want to point out he, again, did not give a single actual solution, and I'd love to hear one in his rebuttal from Sacramento. But here's the reality. I have gone through the land use process, approving housing, working with developers, working with community members for the last 8 years. We have found solutions. We have not increased permit fees. We have not increased the overall cost by things that we've layered on in Santa Rosa, despite what Mr. Greer would say. We have worked with folks to repurpose city land, to reduce permit fees, to reduce impact fees. They're different things. And to make sure that we're helping to fund projects so that they get built. And yes, the state tells you how much you have to build and how much you have to build in each category. But you do have the opportunity when you go through your land use process, your general plan, your downtown specific plans, to work with the local community to say, what does that actually look like? And how do we make sure that we're meeting the need, not just for the residents that live there now, but to your point, Jason, to my son when he grows up.
Okay. Mike, do you have any specifics about what you do to lessen affordability?
Actually, yes, but let me put it this way. If all these things are working so well, why are prices still going so high for the things that Chris and the city council have been doing? Why are they still going up? They should be going down. We do need to look at things. And again, I come back to the things that we do on the state level is quit making all the mandates saying you have to do this, you have to do this. You have to have so much of this housing or so much of that housing. We have to – what we are doing now and what Chris is actually advocating is we need to get more – state money, more tax money from the property owners who already have property. We need to tax them more so that we can go ahead and fund everybody else. He wants to go ahead, and as you look at some of the building that's being taken care of, a lot of it, it's done through nonprofits. Okay, so where is that money at? We need to hold the people accountable right now that's spending the money. We need to take a look at it. So how do we increase the housing? We reduce the cost of housing. We encourage those builders to come in and start building again. Okay, and we don't do that. We have too many restrictions, too many insurance requirements and so forth that are stopping those homes from being built.
Okay, we're going to take another break, then we'll be back with the second assembly debate.
The State Assembly District 2 debate on KSRO will continue after this. Now, back to the State Assembly District 2 debate on KSRO.
Yes, welcome back to the California State Assembly District 2 debate. My name is Jeff Woodworth. I am in studio with Chris Rogers and Mike Greer, as well as our moderators, Dr. Dave and Jason Walsh. And I will turn it over back to the moderators. Gentlemen.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Jason Walsh with North Bay Biz Magazine. My next question is for Mike. We just talked about housing affordability, and you both brought up some local planning control issues. Several new laws from Sacramento the past few years were passed to streamline city planning approvals of housing projects. But many local leaders decry such losing their decision-making about community character to Sacramento. Is it a case of regional overreach, or did something have to be done to accelerate the building of new homes? Mike.
I believe very firmly in local control, and we have seen that the state legislature and the governor has taken away local control, not just of city councils, board of supervisors, school districts. They're taking away all of that to put it on a state level. I firmly believe that local level is much more effective. I don't think that the state should have to go ahead and mandate that locals have to do certain thing. Let the local governments who are elected officials by that community, let them take care of it. If Santa Rosa wants to do it the way they're doing it, they're elected, that should be their right. Okay? If somebody in Crescent City where I live, it should be their right to do the same thing and not have the local control. It's, you know, not have the state control over regulate everything, because we have seen that when the state starts to regulate, what happens? One size fits all. And as both Chris and I have said throughout the campaign, one size does not fit all. But that's what the state does on state regulations. And it doesn't allow the opportunity for the elected officials and the people and the voters in their communities to have a say-so because of that.
Chris, is it one size fits all, or is it dealing with the housing crisis?
So I think that the way that I've always described housing development in this district in particular is that government has a responsibility to set the table. They're not necessarily – the state government has a responsibility to set the table. They're not the ones that cooks the meal, right? If you provide a clear path on what we need to accomplish, whether it's based on the carrying capacity of your land, the vacancy rate, the job market, how many jobs you have, whatever the metric is to determine how much housing you need to provide for your community, particularly for our low-income workers who otherwise are driving from a far distance to get here from Lake County or wherever have you, provide that number and then give flexibility to locals on what makes sense for them and for their community in terms of the planning process. Make sure that you do that in your general plan so that it's out there up front, and then give a menu or an array of tools to each local government to figure out what meets the character of their community. So when you talk about things like reducing fees, reducing impact fees or development fees, there's a very broad category where you have multiple different things that might work in one community but might not in the other. Put them all on the table and let the local community decide what makes sense. When you talk about repurposing city land, some cities have a surplus of parking, some do not. Maybe that is an option that matters in Santa Rosa but doesn't work in Sebastopol, for instance. Give folks options to meet the overall intent and the overall goal. And yes, the state might need to give them a little bit of a push, but make sure that you have built-in flexibility for local communities to try to do what makes sense for their community and to make it work and meet that need.
Mike, do you think there's enough flexibility?
What I see, and exactly what Chris just said, is that the state needs to give you a plan. See, this is what it is. What's happened in the state level is they have detailed those plans so much that it takes away that flexibility. And that's what we need. We need to have it. Up in Eureka right now, they have a measure on their ballot, Measure F, to go ahead and instead of taking the parking lots downtown where everybody for the businesses and the tourists can park, they want to make it into housing. There's another location. This Measure F will say, use this location. It has everything there. It has the property is there. It's got the neighborhoods there. It's got the grocery stores. Everything is there. Use that. Because the City Council in Eureka went ahead and says, no, this is what we're doing. Why did they do it that way? Because that's what the state told them they had to do. They're taking it to the ballot in Measure F to go ahead and let's put it here. This will work. Why not do it there? But because the state says we have to do that. Now, if we go to this other place, that means we have more regulations that we're going to have to follow. We have to refile everything. No, give the locals a chance. Give them the opportunity. And so, yes, I think the state's taking away the flexibility.
Chris, back to you.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused by the ideology here because I'm getting a little bit of whiplash because the Measure F up in Eureka is exactly what Mr. Greer is talking about of giving locals the opportunity to decide where their housing makes the most sense for them, where the city council and the community passed their local housing element, identifying areas, and then now it's on the ballot because a billionaire who doesn't even live in the state sued them to change it so that he can build whatever he wants on the properties that he owns. So is it local control? Because if it's local control, that's what gave us that plan. And in Sacramento, they've given enough flexibility to where when you do your housing element and when you do your general plan, a process that I've done over the last 6 years as a city council member, not just for us, but also looking at our regional transit networks, when I've been the chair of the SCTA and the Regional Climate Protection Authority, you are having conversations with other jurisdictions about how to best make it work. You have regional housing needs assessment numbers that come down from the state, and then you have the flexibility to figure out how and where is appropriate in your community to do it.
Thank you both again. I want to change the conversation and the focus a little bit. I mean, this is a very interesting district. It's diverse, right? Santa Rosa in the south. You've got rurals in the north. A number of just different communities with different requirements. Third largest that we see in the assembly. But what's common is the challenge of healthcare related to all of the residents in this district. And these challenges, given this rural-urban, rural-suburban difference, is hugely important. So I'm going to start, Chris, with you, and then Mike, come over to you. But let's talk about healthcare a little bit and the challenges for healthcare and what you view are the important issues and your plans moving forward. Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a critical issue throughout our district and all of California, but especially in this district that goes from Santa Rosa all the way up to Oregon. You have, for instance, legislation that just was passed to help try to save a hospital in Fort Bragg that has earthquake retrofit requirements that don't really make sense for a single-story building. If that hospital closes, the nearest care is an hour and 15 minutes away for folks in that community. I already mentioned the challenge with reproductive choice up in Eureka because there's so few providers and they're mostly religious-based providers up there. You don't have access to the same amount of clinics. You don't have specialists. It's hard to attract people into an area where you don't have housing and where it's a high cost of living, where people will come get it on their resume for a couple of years and then they'll leave for some place where they can make more money. For me, there's a lot of things that we can do that are band-aids on a broken system, but I'm a big believer in universal healthcare. That when you talk about one of the biggest challenges for this district, it literally comes down to that it doesn't make financial sense for private healthcare insurance companies to locate their resources, whether that means their facilities or their people, in areas that they can't make as much money from because there's fewer population. I think that if you had a universal healthcare system that was more equitable in its distribution of resources, you'd have better access for folks on the North Coast. And you're not going to see that in a system where most of the decisions being made around healthcare are derived from how much money you can extract from a community. That doesn't work in small communities.
All right, Mike?
That's not the real problem. The real problem is we don't have the providers. That's where it's at. We don't have the doctors. We don't have the nurses. Whether it's universal health care, whether it's private health care, it doesn't make any difference. We don't have the providers. Chris can talk about not having these specialists. He has them here. In Crescent City, we don't even have an optometrist. Okay? You want a dental appointment, it's 6 months down the road. You want a specialist, you drive 2 to 3 hours over to Medford. Or you go elsewhere. I understand what these things actually are because I live those on a daily basis. Okay, same thing with prescriptions. You want to redo that. It's very difficult to go ahead and even get that because you don't have them. We don't have the providers. Universal health care won't do anything to provide additional doctors, additional nurses in our areas that we're at. We need to have a program. Again, let's go back to Eureka. They actually have an intern program where they bring in some doctors and they go ahead and help pay for this stuff. And they have, for the cost for their education, everything else, they bring it in. You know, they keep there and they stay there because they begin to learn what the community is like. We need that. We need additional workforce housing, if that's what it takes, to go ahead and have doctors there. A lot of them won't come because they come up and say, well, we can't buy a house here because there's not one available. Okay, all the ones that we want to live in, you know, there's nothing else. They're already, you know, occupied. So we need to have that workforce housing, a way to do it, a way to involve these new doctors, these new nurses into the community itself through different community groups. That's where the problem is. It's because just yesterday, the day before yesterday, you had, I believe it was Adventist and Providence got together and says, yes, we're going to go ahead and do it. We're going to get together and we're going to have health care on the coast. Because they came together as private entities to go ahead and work together. Okay, and that's what we need also. You know, I understand these things, and we definitely need to get more providers, not less, and that's what the state will do.
Chris, it sounds like it's partly an implementation issue, access issue, providers issue, as your opponent mentioned. I'll give you a minute for rebuttal, and then Mike, come right back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. There are good programs that are out there that are starting to help turn the Titanic in terms of training people. You see Cal Poly Humboldt, for instance, up on the North Coast, is doing a better job of training nurses, but if you just look 10 years ago, they were cutting their program because they didn't have employable nursing slots up in Humboldt County. In fact, Senator McGuire dug in on that to make sure that they had the program that was there. But you don't have an incentive for private insurance companies that are profit-driven to locate and invest in workforce development, to invest in housing in areas where they have fewer people. You do have an ability, if you create a universal healthcare system, for the state to provide competition for these folks, where they can invest in those same programs to make sure that they have the employees and reduce the overall cost. We saw when Gavin Newsom announced that the state was going to produce its own insulin, we saw the cost of insulin start to go down before it even produced insulin, because even the specter of competition for people who otherwise have a monopoly on a market in an area is going to be cheaper and provide better service for folks.
Mike, rebuttal?
My insulin hasn't gone down, so I don't know where you get that information from,
that,
because mine has not gone down. It's stayed the same. But what you really have to do is work together. I have talked with the Sutter Hospital people. I have talked with our county. I have talked with our city. I've talked with our school district about developing workforce housing. Okay. Now, that workforce housing isn't just going to be for doctors and nurses, but it can be for other people. Right now, we know that the hospital, Sutter Health, goes ahead and they rent apartments for different visiting physicians that are there for 6 months at a time. We need to find a way to extend that instead of 6 months. It's got to go further. They're not going to do a guy living in an apartment. They're going to have some place they can actually buy. And to me, that is one of the key things. The other thing that's necessary is education for these providers for their children. It's just not housing. It's everything else that goes around. You have to have the rest of it to go with it. And a lot of people don't like to go into the rural areas because they don't have all the social conveniences. They don't have all the educational conveniences that a city does. It's just not money, but it's, you know, it's just the way it is.
Thank you both very much.
The State Assembly District 2 debate on KSRO will continue after this. Now, back to the State Assembly District 2 debate on KSRO.
Hello, my name is Jeff Woodworth, and this is the California State Assembly District 2 debate on KSRO between Chris Rogers and Mike Greer. I am going to turn it over to our moderators, Dr. Dave McEwen and Jason Walsh, for the final questions of this debate. Gentlemen.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Jason Walsh with North Bay Biz Magazine. And we're going to turn the questioning towards some other things on the November ballot. Chris, Proposition 36, it calls for allowing felony charges and stiffer sentences for certain drug and theft crimes, rolling back recent initiatives that have effectively lowered incarceration rates for non-violent offenses. Would Prop 36 make the streets safer or simply lock up shoplifters and people with substance abuse problems?
Yeah, I'm opposed to Prop 36. If you look at the actual economics behind it, it would cost Sonoma County about $34 million. We moved in this direction a couple of years ago of trying to decriminalize homelessness and decriminalize substance abuse problems. And Prop 36, while it says would push people into more substance abuse programs, it doesn't actually provide those programs. It doesn't provide any funding for it. That means that it would push the cost down to the local level. And like I said, for Sonoma County in particular, $34 million in additional costs on the county. You also then would have no guarantee in the proposition that if somebody either was unable to complete substance abuse training or if they slipped back into substance abuse, they would still end up back into the court system, which I think many people in California have started to acknowledge is not the best way to solve the problem. It's a more expensive way to solve the problem, and it ultimately doesn't make our community any safer.
Mike, Prop 36.
I am in favor of Prop 36. I am in favor of decreasing crime. I think that what's happened so much in the past is the fact that, yes, we have all these drug problems. Let's let these nonprofits take care of it. There's no accountability. It hasn't been taken care of. Take Santa Rosa. What have you seen? Have you seen crime rates, you know, have they decreased very much? Have you seen homeless decrease? No. These things are going up. These things aren't changing. All these things that have been done so far have not helped. It's time to change directions. Try something different. Okay? What this Prop 36 does, you know, it takes care of some of the issues that were established by Prop 47 with Safe Schools Act, which did absolutely nothing about making schools safe. Absolutely nothing. It made it worse. And that's what that did, because it lowered the crime, the punishment that's there. If you cannot be held accountable, and what we're hearing right now is, you know, you don't want anybody accountable for their actions. We need to hold everybody accountable, whether it's for the money that's being spent or whether it's for their actions. And what we're seeing from the Democrats is they don't want to hold anybody accountable. They don't want to be held accountable for how they spend their money on the state level. That's why the governor vetoed the accountability bill. You don't want to see it on the same thing on this level. You don't want to be held accountable. People that are trying to hold people accountable are blacklisted, and you know everybody comes out against them, but we need to be accountable. I will be accountable. Prop 36 will do that. It'll make people accountable for their actions and slapping them on the wrist and saying, oh, well, that's just too bad. You just go ahead and go do it again. This will actually have some teeth to it. And that's why the Democrats in the legislature, and Creedon, if Chris was there, would go ahead and try their best not to have it on her, because over 70% of the people are in favor of this prop, according to the latest polls, simply because it's going to make our streets safer. But if Chris doesn't want to make our streets safer, that's completely up to him.
Chris, do you want to make our streets safer, or is it... or is it an issue of accountability?
Well, I would ask Mr. Greer if he's going to represent this district. He should read the paper on this district. We just had a headline in the Press Democrat last week that Santa Rosa was just named as one of the top 30 safest cities in the country. So when he talks about what a lawless hellhole we have in Santa Rosa, I'm not quite sure what he's reading. And if you look at homelessness in Sonoma County, it's gone down 7 of the last 8 years with a blip during the pandemic. The things that we are doing is working. And if what he wants to do is recriminalize people who need substance abuse issues, that's on him. And yes, while people support this in the polls, the polls also show that people prefer interventions in drug and abuse and alcohol abuse that is not further incarceration. They turn to incarceration when they don't have access to the services that they need, the beds, particularly for substance abuse problems. And we've seen that up and down the North Coast.
Mike? Well,
again, I think if you take a look at the one day in time that they do with the homelessness, you'll see that it went up for Santa Rosa. But the fact of the matter is, on the county as a whole, it's going up. I really believe that this will help take care of that crime. He didn't address the crime. He's talking about the drug, because we need to go ahead and address those where it's at. We need to take care of it. They need to have those methods or ways to go ahead and take care of that drug addiction. There's no question about that. This takes in all of that. Why is it that the Democrats, including Chris, don't want to hold people accountable for what their actions are? I believe in that. I believe in accountability, whether it's in education, which is something we haven't talked about, or businesses, which we haven't talked about, which has surprised me, is the simple fact that if we don't hold people accountable, things get worse. And that's what happens ever since, you know, Vice President Harris was Attorney General and got Prop 47, Safe Schools Act, which did nothing for schools, but just lowered the requirements and raise the ability for people to create crime. And that's what's happened.
Thank you both. I mean, throughout the debate, right, we talked a lot about a quality of life issues, There's common ground in a lot of ways around this district. And Mike, you talked about, for example, accountability. And one of the issues related to accountability is obviously the national race. You support Donald Trump. I think you have mentioned publicly before that you're going to vote for him. Chris, I'm going to assume that you're not going to vote for Donald Trump. And as a result, in that search for accountability, what is the accountability for the former president? Did he win the 2020 election? Did he not win the 2020 election? We'll give you 2 minutes, and then Chris, we'll come over to you.
Okay. It's real simple. I don't worry about 2020. I look to the what's forward. Okay, Biden is the president. He was the president. That's done. That's done with. I don't worry about that. I worry about what's happening now. I worry about what's happening here in this district. Okay, I'm not worried so much about some of the national things. What I'm worried about is the education in California. Something that, for some reason, in every one of these debates that we've been in, it's never been brought up, maybe one little question on education. And it's huge, especially here, when you have so many problems in Santa Rosa with education. Look what's happening in the high schools. Where's the safety? These have never been addressed. And our question, why aren't these things being addressed? Why aren't you talking about education? It's the number one thing in the state of California, is the education.
Right, but the question was about 2020, and you talked about the accountability of the attorney general.
Absolutely.
When Kamala Harris was the attorney general, but you
want
to look
and
forward
she should be
from 2020.
For that. Okay, maybe, I really don't want to get into national politics.
Okay.
Yes, I am going to vote for Donald Trump. There's no question about that. Okay, but what my concern is, and it should be our concern here, isn't the national level, but what's happening in our district? What's hurting our people here? But every time we get in one of these debates, it's never brought up about the businesses, the 500 businesses that have left California in the last 5 years. It's never talked about all these businesses, all the small businesses that are closing because of the regulations. Why aren't we hearing about that? Why aren't we having questions about that? Okay, these are the things that are important. It's the economy. It's the education. Now, on a national level for education, are there issues? Yeah. Test scores are down all over on the national level. Do we need to do something about it? Yes. I do believe in school choice. Okay, but I also believe that the local school boards should have the flexibility to do what's necessary. I think that's really important. And like I say, what happened back in 2020 does not concern me now. That's done. That's past. I like to look to the future and what's now. I'm a realist. What's happening right now? Not then. Right now, the fear, and that's what Democrats do. They put the fear in. Everybody says, oh, this 2025, this is all these things going to happen. No, read the platform. Read the Republican platform. Read the Democrat platform. I read things in the Democrat platform that would, amaze people.
Thank you very much, Mike. Chris, same question to you.
Mr. Greer can have my 2 minutes if he wants to answer yes or no. Did Donald Trump or did Joe Biden win the election in 2020?
The final results showed that Joe Biden did.
Do you believe that the final results were accurate?
I'll put it this way. Do I believe that there were some voting irregularities? Yes. Even before the election, when everybody started passing different voting laws within the first 6 months, were there irregularities? Yes. Does that concern me now? No. What concerns me now is what's taking place. And that's the problem with the Democrats, is they concentrate on the past and not look to the future. And when they look to the future, they go ahead and they put the cart before the horse. So they create more problems before there are solutions. We need to have solutions before you start causing more problems.
Chris, do you want to give them the full 2 minutes, or you just want to go?
Look, this is, and this goes back to the very first question that you asked, which was about values within this district and about why 2/3 of the people in this district vote Democrat. Who won the 2020 election is not going to have an impact on California moving forward, but it is a values indicator for people who live here on where Mr. Greer would be on issues and, quite frankly, on how seriously he would take his job of looking into data, not just voting or putting forth legislation based on what his gut tells him. Homelessness is down in Sonoma County, regardless of what your gut tells you. Crime is down in Sonoma County, regardless of what your gut tells you. We need leaders who are going to take the time to become informed on issues and vote appropriately and address the needs of their community appropriately. When you won't answer questions about if you think that it was a stolen election, what you would do to protect access to abortion, climate change, whether you think that it's real, which you have said is not real and not man-made. Those are all values-based assessments that the public can make about where you would be on other issues in Sacramento as well. There's thousands of bills in Sacramento each year. The public isn't going to be able to ask you about every single one. Those are indicators to folks on whether they can trust your judgment, trust your research ability, and trust you to have their best interests in Sacramento. And quite frankly, you fail compared to what the values of this district are.
Mike, let me give you a minute, too, so that you can close for your kind of closing argument as well. Chris, we'll do the same thing to you. Let's give you each a minute here to close out.
Okay, it's real simple. Chris says that I don't believe in climate change. Yes, climate change has always happened, always will happen. Okay. Second, do I understand what the values are? Absolutely, I understand them. All that the Democrats can do is talk about Trump and those policies. They don't talk about now. As you look at what's taking place now in this district, it's because of the Democrats. We're having to pay the high cost of living, the high cost of gas that's going to go up, they say possibly another 65 cents, if the regulators go ahead and pass a new bill on more climate regulation. Okay, that's because of the Democrats. Chris isn't going to change his vote simply because, you know, what's happening here. He says two-thirds. Two-thirds? Yeah, two-thirds is one county. You've got a tremendous number of conservative people up in Del Norte, Trinity, Humboldt, even in Mendocino County. Most of the votes are here in Santa Rosa. So, yes, he's going to vote for the people in Santa Rosa. But if you want something that's going to be for everybody, I'm the one that needs to be elected.
Thank you very much, Mike. Chris, let's hear your closing argument.
Yeah, going back to the using data and not just gut feeling, Santa Rosa is 25% of the district, not two-thirds. And that 25% of the district has seen the work that I've done over the last 8 years, going through four wildfires, a pandemic, a drought, a flood. These were nonpartisan issues. What mattered to people was having a representative who was going to show up, do their homework, work hard, and help get people home. That's what I've done for this community. I know this district like the back of my hand. I've helped represent it in the state legislature as an aide before. I've been up and down the North Coast meeting with folks, talking about issues like housing and climate change and access to rural health care. These are the things that are on people's minds, and they want to vote for somebody who they know cares about their family. That's me. So my website is chrisrogersforassembly.com. I would encourage folks to go to look at our positions on things, to see who's supporting our campaign, and to reach out to have a conversation about the future here on the North Coast and in California.
I want to thank you both for being here today, for making the trip down, but also taking the time during these kind of contentious politics within our country to have a civil debate, moments that were emotional and heated, but overall very interesting to talk to both of you. I want to thank my colleague Jason Walsh as well for being here. Excellent questions. And also KSRO for hosting this fantastic opportunity.
This has been the California State Assembly District 2 debate on KSRO between Mike Greer and Chris Rogers.